Shalom, Hadavarnix. We're ready for our next session of the First Regathering, session number 41. You'll find this session on page 360 of your notes, page 360. So let's begin by our review, taking a look at where we've been in the previous week. Well, last week, we took a look at the boundaries of the land during the Messianic Kingdom. And I showed you this slide. This is my understanding of the boundaries of the land. And I wanted you to note that the modern state of Israel only takes up a small portion of the land promised to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and the Jewish people. And the reason I went through this material lies in the fact that with the Gaza handover, the Israeli government and the American government were criticized highly by fervent Christian Zionists. And I wanted to point out that Israel has experienced expansion and contraction of the land over the centuries, depending on our obedience. So here is the modern state of Israel as it exists now, only about 30% of the land promised to the Jewish people. And as I said, as we look at graphs of the ancient and modern possession of the land, we see that it has expanded and contracted a number of times over the centuries. First of all, this is a chart of the ancient possession of the land, the maximum possession being only about 70% under the United Kingdom, but then dropping off to just about 0% with the first worldwide dispersion. Then we looked at this chart, the modern possession of the land, and we saw that with the first worldwide regathering, modern Zionism, we gained back approximately 40% of the land promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But with the peace process of 1991, we began to lose land. We pulled out of the Gaza Strip, for example. And we don't know if we're going to annex the West Bank or lose the entire West Bank. We'll see. But anyway, the Gaza disengagement lies in toward the bottom of the chart, the row entitled Peace Process. It's part of the contraction of the land that has happened. Where will it go in the near future? We don't know. We only know that in the second worldwide dispersion in the middle of the tribulation, we will be cast out of the land again, only to return to the land with the second worldwide return. And at that time, Israel will possess 100% of the promised land with the coming of the Messiah and the institution of the Messianic Kingdom. Always keep in mind, and this is a very, very important fact to keep in mind, that there are two worldwide regatherings promised for the Jewish people. The worldwide regathering that we are studying now is the fulfillment of the first worldwide regathering in unbelief for the purpose of judgment. The judgment will come during the tribulation period. So that is the fulfillment of this prophecy right now. We're living it out. As we looked at the history of Israel, we saw that Ismail Haniyeh, the head of Hamas, was elected Palestinian prime minister, and Ehud Olmert became the prime minister of Israel. During that time, Gilad Shalit was kidnapped and held for ransom. The Second Lebanon War was encountered July 12th to August 13, 2006, and this map shows you some of the areas that the IDF struck during the Second Lebanon War. At that time, Iran began boasting about its nuclear capability and expanding its resources, its nuclear resources, all the time saying that Israel has to be destroyed. Due to their criticism of them during the Second Lebanese War, Chief of Staff Don Chalutz resigned, and also the Minister of Defense, Amir Peretz, resigned. However, Shimon Peres then was appointed the ninth president of Israel. Shimon Peres, of course, has been part and parcel of Israel's political scene almost from the beginning. Very, very huge impact this man has had upon the modern state of Israel, Shimon Peres. Salam Fayyad became the Palestinian prime minister for a short time. And then, well, we talked about the eschatology in the future, I mentioned that the temple was going to be reinstituted because the Levitical priests met for the first time in 2,000 years in Jerusalem for training. And the Temple Institute has been very heavily involved in preparing for the Second Temple. If you go to the Temple Institute in Jerusalem, you will see some of these items that I'm going to talk about. And I want you to remember, these are not museum pieces. They may be behind plastic or glass doors and windows. They may be on display, but they are not display pieces. They are the actual items that the Temple Institute intends to be used in the Second Temple. Now, for example, here you see a picture of the high priest's garments and the incense altar. Well, the garments for the high priest and Levitical priests are being made. The musical instruments are being constructed. This is the harp. The items used in the sacrificial system are under construction. The furniture for the temple is being constructed. And I also advise you, if you'd wanted to look into this more, a couple of good books to get are The Holy Temple in Jerusalem by Chaim Richman, again, Temple Institute, and Carta's Illustrated Encyclopedia of the Holy Temple in Jerusalem. Some great drawings and a Jewish rabbinical look at what they expect the Third Temple will be like. At that time, also, Israel bombed the Al-Kibar nuclear complex in Syria. It was a secret nuclear complex that Syria had put together. And here's the before picture. There is the nuclear complex right there under the red circle. And then the Israelis bombed it, and now it's just a barren piece of land. The Syrians have bulldozed all the wreckage away. It's just a flat spot in the Syrian hills. President Bush sponsored the Annapolis Conference in Annapolis, Maryland. And here we have a picture of Ehud Olmert, President Bush, and Mahmoud Abbas all shaking hands and smiles. Everybody felt that we were on the verge of peace one more time. Well, that brings us now to 2008. This is on page 360 of your notebook, toward the top of the page. And we start in January, January 3rd. And I bring out some of the terrorism that Israel continued to experience. January 3rd, 2008, Palestinian militants fire a Katyusha rocket with a longer range than usual from Gaza into northern Ashkelon. So the Palestinians in Gaza are doing all they can to increase the range of their rockets or get rockets that will hit most of Israel. January 3rd, 2008. All right, January 17th, 2008. In an effort to pressure Hamas to stop rocket fire into Israel, Defense Minister Ehud Barak orders the closing of border crossings from Israel and into Gaza. January 23rd, 2008, tens of thousands of Palestinians pour into Egypt from Gaza after Hamas militants blow holes in the border wall. So you see the Egyptians were not allowing the Palestinians to come in either. But Hamas wasn't against blowing a hole in their wall. January 24th, approximately 700 Palestinian security forces go to Jordan to begin U.S. training by the United States for a new gendarmerie, a new police force that's projected to be eventually 50,000 strong. A police force of 50,000 sounds more like an army to me. And the U.S. is doing the training behind it. All right, let's move into February 3rd, 2008. Egypt refuses to cede control of the border to Hamas and reseals the damaged border crossing. So Egypt would have nothing to do with Hamas's aggression. February 4th, 2008. Hamas military wing carries out a suicide bombing in the Israeli town of Dimona, killing one and injuring 23. All right, let's move to page 361. February 12th, a few days later, Hezbollah terror chief Imud Mugniya is assassinated in Damascus. That's Damascus, Syria, of course. And Hezbollah is the terrorist organization on the northern border of Israel. So their leader, Imud Mugniya, is assassinated. And here is a drawing of Imud Mugniya. This is the man who was in charge of the Hezbollah harassment along the northern border. So Israel takes him out of the picture. But the terror doesn't stop. March 6, 2008, we move into the third month of the year. 8 yeshiva students are shot dead by an Arab resident of East Jerusalem in a terror attack at Merkatz Harav Yeshiva. March 20, 2008, Ami Oritz is injured. Messianic Jews harassed. March 20, 2008, 15-year-old Ami Oritz stayed home from school. And here is a picture of the Oritz family. Ami is the tall, slim teenager on the left. His mom, Leah, in the middle. David Oritz on the right. So this is the Oritz family. So Ami stayed home from school. It was Purim, a Jewish festival in which holiday baskets are sent to friends and acquaintances to commemorate the Jews' thwarting of Haman's evil plot recorded in the book of Esther in the Bible. To Ami's delight, someone left a holiday package on the Oritz family doorstep, common practice in Israel. When young Ami opened the package, it exploded in his face, filling his body with hundreds of pieces of shrapnel and left him in critical condition. This is the news story carried by Ma'ariv newspaper. They were very, very supportive and positive toward the Oritz family. Covered this in detail, but there you see a picture of Ami in the hospital with David, his father, close by. It was very good to have an Israeli newspaper take an interest in what had happened here. Now, Ami's father, David, is a pastor of a Messianic community in the town of Ariel. Apparently, this was not an attempt to injure a 15-year-old boy, but rather an attempt to murder a minister of the gospel in Israel. Since then, 2 churches in Jerusalem have been attacked by arsonists and burned. A pastor's car in Beit Shan has been firebombed. A Messianic baker's business has been denied the kashrut license only because she's a Messianic believer. And that kashrut license is the equivalent of your passing the health inspection. It's the equivalent of the health inspection here in the United States. Jobs have been lost, visas and citizenship denied because of faith in Yeshua. Flyers showing pictures of Messianic leaders and congregational members have been circulated in every major city and many smaller settlements in Israel. These flyers contain a message to the public to be aware of the missionaries who are trying to steal the souls of Jews and who masquerade as Jews but who are not. Names and addresses have been published under the pictures. This happens to be against the law, but the Orthodox feel they can rise above the law on this issue. In Ariel, the flyers were posted at every bus stop from Tel Aviv to Ariel, a distance of 45 kilometers. Now, we do not know if the perpetrators of the bombing in the Oretz home were the ones who published these flyers, but at the very least, the flyers incited and helped them to identify, very clearly, helped them to identify the family and their address. Press and media coverage have continued extensively on the Ami Oritz case. They have not only continued to lift up the name of Yeshua in Israel, but they have also continued to put pressure on authorities to bring justice in the case. So the Oritz have taken advantage of the situation for the Lord. In May of 2009, the FBI officially became involved in the case because David and Leah are dual American and Israeli citizens. Now, turn to page 362. Their help with the Shin Bet moved the investigation forward quickly until Jack Teitel was arrested on October 7th, 2009. Quite a number of months later, and here's a picture of Yaakov Jack Teitel. He was sentenced to 2 life terms in prison for some serial killings. Found guilty, I believe, of the bombing of Ami, but he was found guilty of killings as well. All right, Sunday, April 6, 2008. Jewish group to slaughter the lamb at the Passover sacrifice rehearsal. A Bible-adherent Jewish group on Sunday ritually slaughtered a young lamb, which is called a rehearsal for the renewal of the Passover sacrifice once Jerusalem's temple is rebuilt. The temple movement won approval to carry out the practice sacrifice from Israel's high court on Friday after animal rights groups asserted that the lamb would be put through inhumane suffering. And there are animal rights groups in Israel, and I just wonder how they're going to react when the sacrificial service actually gets going, because they're already raising problems just with a practice sacrifice. And of course, in the temple, be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of animals sacrificed. Well, anyway, in its legal response, the temple movement explained that the slaughter would be carried out according to biblical standards, which is the same method used to slaughter lambs at kosher slaughterhouses around the country. And the rabbis have done their best to try to eliminate unnecessary suffering on the basis of the animals. And so the slaughter is carried out extremely quickly and painlessly, and is a very humane way to slaughter animals for consumption or for sacrifice. The sacrifice and accompanying religious ceremonies were performed at a prominent yeshiva overlooking Jerusalem's Temple Mount, which is still occupied by several Muslim shrines. April 9th, 2008. Palestinian gunmen killed two Israeli civilian employees at the Nahal Oz fuel depot, which pumps fuel into Gaza. April 16, 2008. Hamas ambushes and kills three Israeli soldiers in the Gaza Strip and fires more than 20 rockets into southern Israel. The terrorism harassment continue. April 19, 2008. A suicide car bombing and mortar ambush carried out by Hamas's military wing at Kerem Shalom Crossing injures 13 Israeli soldiers. Israel retaliates with three airstrikes, killing seven Hamas militants. April 25, 2008. Five Palestinian groups claim responsibility for killing two Israeli security guards in Tul Karem in the West Bank. So terrorism continued and continued and continued well into 2008. Page 363, May 14th. President Bush arrives in Israel to celebrate its 60th anniversary, and a rocket landed on a shopping mall in Ashkelon, wounding 30. Palestinian Islamic Jihad and Popular Resistance Committees both claim responsibility for that rocket. End of May. May 31st, 2008. We're on page 363, by the way. May 31st, Hezbollah returned the remains of five Israeli soldiers killed in the summer war of 2006. That's the Lebanese war. Israel released an Israeli of Lebanese descent who had been convicted of spying for Hezbollah. So a prisoner exchange there. The bodies of five Israeli soldiers for one terrorist. June 4th, 2008. President Mahmoud Abbas calls on Hamas to join a national and comprehensive dialogue and offered early presidential and parliamentary elections if the talks succeeded. June 19th, an Egyptian-brokered temporary ceasefire between Israel and Hamas goes into effect. Does it hold? June 24th. 2008. Palestinian Islamic Jihad breaks the temporary truce and fires three rockets into Israel after Israeli troops kill a Palestinian Islamic Jihad leader in Nablus. Nablus, of course, is in the West Bank, not in Gaza. Now, July 8th, as we move into the month of July, this is a mark it up moment. Mark this heading and pay attention to this paragraph, this section. Jewish priests fitted for service in the future Jerusalem temple. Confident that Israel's temple to the Almighty will be rebuilt atop Jerusalem's Temple Mount in the very near future, the Temple Institute this month began fitting Jews from the biblical priestly tribe for their holy garments. The Bible describes a very specific set of garments to be worn by members of the priestly tribe when they are serving in the temple. This is Levi, of course, the tribe of Levi. This month's fitting was the first time since the destruction of the Second Temple over 2,000 years ago that potential Jewish priests have been measured for such garments. Another detail put into place. Following the fitting, each potential future priest was presented with a set of garments matching the biblical description. Now, when the temple is rebuilt, a fresh set of garments will need to be remade for each priest, as they can only be used in the temple itself. The Temple Institute has for decades been involved in preparing the various garments, instruments, and other items needed to dedicate what is known as the Third Temple. Most Jews and Christians believe the Third Temple will be built atop the Temple Mount, today occupied by Islamic shrines, prior to the coming of Messiah and the establishment of his direct reign over the earth. And here is a photograph showing the fitting of a man being fitted for his Levitical garments. And, of course, the tailor measuring the garment, measuring the man for the garment. So the Levitical garments are now underway. Levites are being prepared for the sacrificial service. All right, page 364. Another important article in your notebook, and one that affects us today, even in 2015, July 27th, 2008, new Israeli regulations could cripple Christian ministries. Israel's Ministry of the Interior has decided to reinstate an old regulation that is threatening to cripple, if not shut down, several Christian ministries by limiting the time volunteers can spend serving in Israel to 27 months. The ruling was as sudden as it was drastic. The effects began to be felt earlier this month when three volunteers from Christian Friends of Israel, assuming their visas would be renewed at the Interior Ministry under the previous five-year agreement, were instead told they had 2 weeks to pack up and leave the country. So many ministries have been affected by this and have had to switch to short-term assignments. But, of course, it's pretty difficult when you need to train people for them to only be there for 3 months or so and then have to be gone for a year. And Josh and Arena, we all know Josh and Arena with Hadavar, they felt the impact of this too. Their visas were denied. They had to leave Israel, and they now minister in the Czech Republic. Their hearts are still in Israel. So be praying that someday they will be able to return and serve the Lord and the Jewish people. So we have a real personal interest in this particular article. All right, August 25th. Let's move into August, end of August. Israel releases 199 Palestinian security prisoners in a gesture of goodwill to Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. So Israel tries to set the proper atmosphere for peace. September 23rd, 2008, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad speaks at the UN. Now, of course, he was the former Iranian president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. In an address to the United Nations General Assembly on the 23rd of September, 2008, Ahmadinejad stated that Zionists are criminals and murderers. They are acquisitive and deceitful and dominate global finance despite their minuscule number. Well, here's a picture of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. He was the sixth president of Iran. He is an anti-Semite to the core, and he promotes anti-Semitic stereotypes. For example, that the Jews dominate global finance in spite of their minuscule numbers, their small numbers. That is a classic anti-Semitic lie. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. He further stated that it is deeply disastrous to witness that some presidential nominees have to visit these people, the Zionists, and take part in their gatherings and swear their allegiance and commitment to their interests in order to win financial or media support. These nations are spending their dignity and resources on the crimes and threats of the Zionist network against their will. Ahmadinejad stated the Zionist regime was on the path of collapse and that underhanded actions of the Zionists as among the causes for the recent unrest in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia. See, it's always the Jews' fault, even if it happens in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia up there near the Black Sea. In a subsequent interview with the Los Angeles Times, Ahmadinejad stated that the Zionist regime resembles an airplane that has lost its engine and is kind of going down. No one can help it. This will benefit everyone. Well, Israel is still around, folks, and will be around until the middle of the tribulation. All right, let's move from September into October, October 22nd, 2008. Israel and the Palestinian Authority reach an agreement to deploy about 550 United States-trained Palestinian police to Hebron. United States training the Palestinian police. I don't know if that's such a good idea. Page 365, October 26th. A foreign minister and Olmert's replacement as leader of the Kadima Party, Tzipi Livni, announces she was unable to form a new coalition government, thereby triggering early elections in Israel on February 10, 2009. And, of course, here is a picture of Tzipora, Tzipi Livni, and she is very active in Israeli politics today as well, a major face in the Knesset. All right, let's move into November, beginning of November, November 4th. Democrat Barack Obama decisively wins the United Nations, that's a slip of the tongue that might be prophetic, huh? A prophetic slip. Democrat Barack Obama decisively wins the United States presidential election. And the reason I mention this, he did it with 78% of the Jewish vote. He's the most anti-Israel U.S. president in recent years. And the Jewish community has voted him in, 78%. And it wasn't, I don't believe, it was that much smaller on his re-election either. And so here's a picture of President Barack Obama, the most anti-Israel U.S. president in recent years. November 26, 2008. Muslim terrorists attack a Chabad house in Mumbai, India, in a series of coordinated attacks on India's largest city and financial capital, killing at least 173 people and injuring over 300. The reason I mention this is because many Israelis travel to Mumbai after their military service, and that's why Chabad chose to put finance and establish a Chabad house in Mumbai. Chabad is very evangelistic. They try to bring Jews back to rabbinic Judaism. And so because most Israelis are secular, that's a good area to have their outreach. All right, let's move into the last month of 2008, December 18th. Egyptian brokered state of calm agreement between Israel and Hamas officially ends. December 27th to January 6th, Israeli Defense Forces launch Operation Cast Lead to halt Hamas rocket fire on Israel and the Gaza Strip. And I see we're just about to your break, and this is a rather long article, so I don't want to keep you from your break. So let's go ahead and take our break. We'll pick it up after the break at December 27th, and Operation Cast Lead. Well, we'll see you then. All righty. Well, our break is over. So let's return to the first regathering. Again, we're on page 365, December 27th through January 16th. Israeli Defense Forces launch Operation Cast Lead to halt Hamas rocket fire on Israel from the Gaza Strip. Israel's Operation Cast Lead comes after 3 years of suffering thousands of daily Palestinian rocket attacks on Israel's southern cities. And, you know, I've documented some of that on the previous pages. That's why I put those little notes there. So you can see that Israel is under constant, under constant attack by the by Hamas. All right, our break's over. So let's pick it up on page 365. From December 27th, 2008 to January 16th, 2009, Israeli Defense Forces launch Operation Cast Lead to halt Hamas rocket fire on Israel from the Gaza Strip. Israel's Operation Cast Lead comes after 3 years of suffering thousands of daily Palestinian rocket attacks on Israel's southern cities. And I've documented some of that on the previous pages. That's why I've put in all those little short notes of terrorist activities and rocket launchings, just to help you to understand exactly what Israel is going through on a daily basis, month by month by month. So since the start of the operation, Hamas has increased their number of attacks and has fired hundreds of rockets into Israel. Hamas is firing an average of 80 rockets into Israel each day. That's the average, 80. Rockets were fired into Ashdod and Ashkelon for the first time, and Grad rockets hitting Beersheba. Here's the state of Israel, a map of the state of Israel, and this is the Gaza Strip. And of course, you've seen this map, this close-up of the Gaza Strip. This is the source of the rocket fire. And here is a map with the Gaza Strip on the left-hand side, the yellow area, showing you the range of the missiles coming from the Gaza Strip. The green area is the you have 15 seconds of warning before a rocket hits. The blue area, you have 30 seconds warning. In the dark brown area, you have 45 seconds warning, and in the red area, you have 1 minute warning before the rocket hits. And so rockets have been fired at Ashdod. Ashdod is there in the 45 second area. And Ashkelon, here's Ashkelon, Ashkelon in the 30 second worth of warning area. And for the first time, rockets hitting Beersheba. Here's Beersheba on the east in the 1 minute warning area. So it's clear that Hamas widened their rocket range in response to the incursion in Gaza. And due to Hamas's endless and widespread barrage of rockets on Israeli towns, the IDF Home Front Command has expanded their security precautions to all towns within a 19-mile radius of Gaza. Schools in Ashdod and Ashkelon and Beersheba and other southern cities are closed as Hamas continues purposely firing rockets into civilian centers, including multiple kindergartens and all major cities. Since the Israeli airstrike began, 4 Israelis have been killed and over 176 were wounded, while hundreds are being treated for shock. We're on page 366 now. Israel's southern citizens have been forced to move into bomb shelters as their community schools, buildings, and roads are destroyed in front of their eyes. In 2 weeks, Hamas has fired 500 rockets into Israel's southern cities. Many of these have been the more deadly Grad Katyusha rockets. January 6th, a 3-month-old girl was wounded from a Grad rocket that was fired into Gedera. And if you look at the map at the top of the page there, you can see Gedera. Again, it is in the 1 minute warning zone, in the zone of increased distance. On January 8th, 4 people were wounded as mortar shells were fired into the Eshkol region. And this circle shows you the Eshkol region, that area on the map. Now, early Thursday morning, January 8th, Palestinian terrorists fired multiple rockets into Nahariya, an Israeli city on the border of Lebanon. So here we are on our map of Israel, but we're going to move from Gaza in the south. Now we'll move up to Galilee in the north. So now we're in this area of the map, this section of Israel. Here's a close-up. Nahariya is on the coast. So rockets were fired into Nahariya from Lebanon. You can see the Lebanon is just directly north of the border. Three rockets were fired again from Lebanon on January 14th into Kiryat Shmona. And here's Kiryat Shmona up in the Israeli panhandle there. Kiryat Shmona is a sitting duck for many rockets. Israel is holding the Lebanese government responsible, as it is Lebanon's job to prevent all attempted rocket attacks on Israel. That's what the Lebanese government is supposed to be doing. Syria, and of course Syria, you can see on the map, is to the east of Israel. Syria is also involving itself in the conflict. On Sunday, January 11th, Syrian citizens fired shots at IDF troops and civilian workers who were repairing a fence along the border. Now, Israel has fired a complaint with the UN, UNIFIL, that's the UN International Force in Lebanon, and is still investigating the incident. On January 11th and 12th, the volume of Hamas rockets decreased, but their firing range was widened. On January 12th, 30 rockets were fired into the south, as opposed to the usual average of 80 rockets per day. But for the first time, a Hamas-fired Qassam rocket was able to reach Kiryat Gat area. So let's move from the Galilee. We'll move back down to the Gaza. We're in the southern part of Israel now. And Kiryat Gat is in the 45-second area of warning. So that's the first time Kiryat Gat got rocketed. The Gaza War, also known as Operation Cast Lead by the Israelis, Operation Massacre by the Palestinians, or the Battle for Al-Furyan, was a three-week armed conflict in the Gaza Strip between Israel and the Palestinian militants that began December 27, 2008, and ended on the 18th of January 2009 in a unilateral ceasefire. Israel's stated goal was to stop rocket fire into Israel and weapons smuggling into the Gaza Strip. And I think you can see the background I went through showed you the reason that Israel wanted to stop all these rockets. It was a constant barrage. After the beginning of the conflict, Palestinian groups continued firing rockets in response to what they characterized as massacres. Israeli forces attacked police stations, military targets, including weapons caches and suspected rocket firing teams, as well as political and administrative institutions in the opening assault, striking in the densely populated cities of Gaza, Khan Yunis, and Rafah. So here's that map of Israel again. You'll find this map on page 368, by the way. This is Gaza, Gaza City, densely populated area. Then to the south, Khan Yunis, and on the border, Rafah, on the Egyptian border. So those are the initial assault targets for Operation Cast Lead. Page 367. But beneath the map, an Israeli ground invasion began January 3rd. Infantry commanders were given an unprecedented level of access to coordinate with air, naval, artillery, intelligence, and combat engineering units during this second phase. Various new technologies and hardware were also introduced. On January 5th, the IDF began operating in the densely populated urban areas of Gaza. During the last week of the offensive, from 12th of January, Israel mostly hit targets it had damaged before and struck Palestinian rocket launching units. Hamas intensified its rocket and mortar attacks against civilian targets in southern Israel, reaching the major cities of Beersheba and Ashdod for the first time during this particular conflict. Israeli politicians ultimately decided against striking deeper within Gaza amid concerns of higher casualties on both sides and rising international criticism. The conflict ended on January 18th when Israel first declared a unilateral ceasefire, followed by Hamas's announcing a one-week ceasefire 12 hours later. Israel completed its withdrawal from the Gaza Strip on January 21st. All right, page 368. There you can see that map of Gaza dominating the page 368. But we will move toward the bottom of the page and 2009. We'll now move into the year 2009. And we begin in the middle of January. January 17th, 2009. Israel declares a ceasefire to end Operation Cast Lead in Gaza. Hamas rejects Israel's call for a ceasefire, but its leadership announces its own ceasefire 12 hours later. All right, page 369. January 18th. The Israeli government opens an emergency clinic at the Eretz Crossing in an effort to provide humanitarian assistance and medical care to the Palestinian civilian population in Gaza. And yet Israel is always accused of massacring civilians and destroying, killing civilians. And yet the IDF does all it can to protect civilians. And this is another example of bringing in humanitarian assistance and medical care as soon as possible. January 22nd, George Mitchell is named special envoy to the Middle East by President Obama. And here is a picture of former senator and special envoy to the Middle East peace, George J. Mitchell, special envoy for Middle East peace. He was unsuccessful, to say the least. January 27, 2009, Palestinian Arab militants detonate a bomb at the Kisufim crossing, killing one Israeli soldier and wounding three. And of course, here's that map of the Gaza Strip. The Kisufim crossing is here in the middle of the border, about halfway down between north and south. This is the location of this terrorist attack here. It's supposed to be a ceasefire. Not exactly a ceasefire. All right, let's move into February. February 10th, elections for the 18th Knesset are held. Let's move into March, March 5th. A Palestinian Arab resident of East Jerusalem attacks an Israeli police car and a bus on the Menachem Begin Expressway in Jerusalem using a bulldozer, injuring two police officers before being shot to death. And here's a photograph that appeared in the news media of this bulldozer terrorist attack. You can see the bulldozer in the background there. That's the bulldozer. You can see the bus that he attacked in the foreground. He attacked the bus with that piece of heavy equipment, knocked it over on its side, and now he is going after a police car and the police vehicle. I believe you can see the white hood of the police vehicle off on the left. But this man was shot to death by people in the area. So we have a terrorist attack now carried out by a bulldozer. Anything and everything can be used as a weapon, can't it? March 15th, 2009. Two Israeli police officers are killed in a shooting attack near Masua in the northern Jordan Valley. March 31, 2009. Benjamin Netanyahu is sworn in as Israeli Prime Minister and head of the new coalition government. April 2, 2009. A 13-year-old Israeli is killed by a local Palestinian Arab in the Jewish settlement of Bat Ayin. A 7-year-old Israeli is also injured and treated for serious wounds. Islamic Jihad and the Imad Migniya group, add the word group there, Imad Migniya was killed, you know, a year ago. We just covered that. He was killed in Damascus, Syria. Now, this is a terrorist group named in his honor, the Imad Migniya group. So add the word group to that sentence. Islamic Jihad and the Imad Migniya group claim responsibility for the attack that on the 7-year-old and on the 13-year-old. Terrorism continues. April 3rd, 2009, the United Nations establishes a fact-finding mission on the Gaza war, headed by Richard Goldstone, an international jurist from South Africa. And by the way, he's a Jewish man. So this is a photograph of him, the leader of the UN fact-finding mission on the Gaza war, Richard Goldstone. So this is investigated again by the UN. Page 370. We come to May 9, 2009. An Israeli resident of Ashdod is kidnapped and killed by three West Bank Palestinians near Gan Yavne. May 18, 2009, President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu meet in the White House. The next month, June 4, 2009, President Obama calls for a new beginning between the United States and Muslims in an historic speech in Cairo. And relations between the Obama administration and Israel really start to deteriorate at this point, as President Obama tries to draw closer and closer to the Muslim world. June 14th, 2009, Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech at the Begin Sadat Center. Note this, this is a mark-it-up sentence, mark-it-up moment. For the first time, Netanyahu endorses the principle of a Palestinian state alongside of Israel. So he's supporting a two-state solution publicly now. June 16, 2009, 10 Palestinian Arab gunmen belonging to an Al-Qaeda cell launch an attack at the Karni crossing, using horses strapped with explosives. Four terrorists and the horses are killed in the ensuing firefight with the IDF. No IDF soldiers were wounded. I'm sure animal rights activists were not happy to learn that the Palestinians are not above using horses to carry their explosives. Of course, it was a rather futile attempt. Let's move all the way to September 15th, 2009. Going back to Mr. Goldstein, Goldstone. Richard Goldstone releases his report accusing both Israel and Hamas of war crimes and possible crimes against humanity during the Gaza War. September 22, 2009. White House hosts a trilateral meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu and Palestinian Authority President Abbas. September 30th, the very next, a few days later. Israel announces it will release 20 female Palestinian detainees and prisoners in exchange for a video showing that Gilad Shalit is still alive. So a number of these detainees and prisoners simply for a video. Israel does value its people. Page 371, top of the page, November 3rd, 2009. The U.S. House of Representatives overwhelmingly passes a resolution denouncing the Goldstone report as, quote, irredeemably biased and unworthy of further consideration or legitimacy. I wonder if Goldstone was trying to overcompensate for his Jewishness. We've seen that before in the history of Israel. But here, this Jewish man, Jewish leader, comes up with a report that the U.S. House of Representatives criticizes highly. November 25, 2009, Prime Minister Netanyahu announces Israel will impose a 10-month freeze on construction in the West Bank settlements in a bid to restart stalled peace talks with the Palestinians. If the Palestinians truly wanted peace, they would have responded long ago to all of Israel's overtures, and we would have had peace long ago. You see the constant struggle and Israel constantly trying to produce an atmosphere that will produce peace. But anyways, the terror continues. December 24th, Rabbi Meir Avshalom of Shavei Shomron is killed in a drive-by shooting near his home. As I said, terrorism continues and continues and continues. Well, we still have a few minutes to go, so let's move into 2010. 2010 on page 371. Let's start in January. I just have one article for January. Two airstrikes against weapons tunnels used to smuggle rockets and militants attempting to fire mortars into Israel are carried out by the Israeli Air Force, killing three militants and wounding another seven. The militants were members of Hamas and the Islamic Jihad movement in Palestine. So there's no attempt at peace at all by these radical groups, is there? They're constantly smuggling in weapons, constantly arming themselves, constantly hitting Israel. February 10, 2010, Tapuach Junction stabbing. Palestinian Authority police officer. Now, this is a member of the Palestinian Authority, an official, a police officer. What does he do? He stabs an Israeli soldier to death. So no matter what position somebody holds in the Palestinian Authority, he's not above suspicion of being a terrorist. February 24, 2010, the murder of Netta Sorek. This Israeli woman is stabbed to death by Palestinian terrorists. Now, another interesting article, interesting event, March 15th. Let's move into March, third month of the year, March 15th, 2010. The rebuilt Hurva Synagogue is dedicated. The Hurva Synagogue, transliterated, the full name is the Beit HaKnesset HaHurba, literally the Ruin Synagogue. That's what Hurba means, a ruin. Also known as the Hurvat Rabbi Yehuda HaHasid, the ruin of Rabbi Judah the Pious, is an historic synagogue located in the Jewish quarter of the Old City of Jerusalem. The synagogue was founded in the early 18th century by followers of Judah HaHasid, but was destroyed by Muslims a few years later in 1721. The plot lay in ruins for over 140 years and became known as the Ruin, the Hurva. In 1864, the Perushim is an ascetic rabbinic sect. The Perushim rebuilt the synagogue, and although officially named Beit Yaakov Synagogue, it retained its name as the Hurva. And here are some pictures of the Hurva Synagogue. This is around 1898. And that dome on the right-hand side of the picture is the main dome of the synagogue, main worship area. Here's another picture of the northern facade of the synagogue around 1930, around the 1930s. Here's the eastern facade again, around 1930, and the focus of the building is that dome. All right, it became Jerusalem's main Ashkenazi synagogue until it too was deliberately destroyed after the withdrawal of Israeli forces by the Arab Legion during the 1948 Arab-Israeli War, though they deliberately destroyed a Jewish place of worship. After Israel captured East Jerusalem from Jordan in 1967, a number of plans were submitted for the design of a new building. After years of deliberation and indecision, a commemorative arch was erected instead at the site in 1977, itself becoming a prominent landmark in the Jewish quarter. And here is a picture of that commemorative arch. And when I first went to Israel, that's what I saw as well. In fact, we walked amid those ruins. But that arch was a very, very dominant symbol in the Jewish quarter of Jerusalem. I remember it well. The plan to rebuild the synagogue in its 19th century style received approval by the Israeli government in 2000, and the newly rebuilt synagogue was dedicated March 15th, 2010. And here are pictures of the new Hurva Synagogue, and it is gorgeous. I've been privileged to view it on the outside in my latest trip to Israel. Beautiful, beautiful building. Here is the inside, gorgeous building on the inside as well, the Hurva Synagogue. I have not had the privilege of going inside, but these pictures tell you the story very clearly. Now, the company involved in its reconstruction believes that restoring the synagogue to its former glory will once again allow it to serve as a center for world Jewry. All right, May 31st, 2010. We're now on page 372. On the morning of May 31st, 2010, IDF naval forces intercepted six ships attempting to break the naval blockade of the Gaza Strip. Israel had set up a naval blockade in order to prevent the smuggling of weapons into the Gaza Strip from the sea. And you have this map on page 373 across the page, and the map is pretty self-explanatory. I'll let you refer to the map as you'll see how the events unfolded in May. After numerous warnings issued by Israel prior to the action, the Navy requested for the ships to redirect toward Ashdod, where they would unload their material, which would then be transferred via land crossings to Gaza after undergoing proper security inspections. All Israel wanted to do was to prevent weapons, military explosives, etc., from getting into the Gaza Strip. That's all they wanted to do. They weren't stopping humanitarian aid. When the vessels refused to alter their course, teams of elite Navy commandos were tasked with overtaking the ships. During the boarding of the lead ship, the Mavi Marmara, demonstrators on board attacked the IDF personnel with live fire, light weaponry, knives, and clubs. And here's a picture of that key ship, the lead ship, the Mavi Marmara, fairly good-sized vessel. And again, it was teeming with peace activists. Additionally, two weapons were grabbed from an IDF soldier and used against him. As a result of the violence, seven soldiers were wounded and nine Turkish activists, peace activists, were killed. All right, bottom of page 373, you see the map of the flotilla engagement and then the picture of the Mavi Marmara. So below that, August 31st, 2010, Hamas terrorists shoot dead four Israeli civilians near Kiryat Arba, including a pregnant woman. Terrorism continues. Page 374. September 2nd, 2010. 2010 direct talks. U.S. launches direct negotiations between Israel and the Palestinian Authority in Washington, D.C. September 14th. A second round of Middle East peace talks between Israel and the Palestinian Authority concludes at Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt. Like I said, the Palestinians wanted peace. It would have come a long time ago. December 18, 2010, the murder of Christine Lucan. This American woman was stabbed to death by Palestinian terrorists and another woman severely injured. Okay, well, I see we are just about to the end of this session. Looks like about 4 minutes or so left to go, so I'll let you out a little earlier. We'll pick it up on page 374 with 2011, the year 2011. So we'll see you at our next session. That'll be page 374. All right, see you later.